From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Struan Grant from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia is interviewed by Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling about the discovery that a protein known to be important in diabetes may also play a key role in heart disease and other disorders.
Dr. Struan Grant is a geneticist at the Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania and a faculty member of the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. His work primarily focuses on complex diseases, specifically in relation to pediatrics. Dr. Grant, let's begin the interview by describing TCF7L2, the protein at the center of your study, and the role it plays in the human body.
The TCF7L2 protein is a transcription factor that is a member of a family of proteins that control the expression of other genes. So it's like a master regulator of genes. It actually lies at the end of a network of proteins in the pathway called the Wnt signaling pathway. And TCF7L2 resides on a number of genes quite benignly. And when Wnt signaling is triggered, there's this cascade effect, and it will then activate the transcription of a repertoire of genes. And the transcription factors, there are quite a large number of them, and so this is just one member of a large family, and TCF7L2 stands for transcription factor 7, like 2. And Wnt signaling itself is the focus of much attention in a number of disease areas, as more and more evidence is pointing to this pathway as being fairly crucial to human disease and phenotypes.
Now, picking up on what you said, I understand that this protein has been linked to diabetes and cancer. When did scientists first determine this linkage, and how does the protein impact or cause the development of those diseases?
In the case of type 2 diabetes, there's been a real revolution in genetics in the last approximately 5 years, where a new approach called genome-wide association studies have been launched, and this is due to technological advances using array-based methods. So now an investigator can scan the whole genome in a non-hypothesis fashion to discover genes underlying disease. And this has proved to be very successful and has uncovered a number of genetic factors in almost all complex disease traits. And the crucial thing is that in these last 5 years, these genetic findings have been replicated by other geneticists. So this is really the first time in the history of human genetics where there's been a large agreement on a large number of genetic findings. So there's real consensus in the field. So in the case of type 2 diabetes and the genome-wide association studies carried out there, and in fact, type 2 diabetes has had more of these types of studies carried out on it than any other disease area, it turns out that the strongest signal is with the gene TCF7L2. And this has been widely replicated not only in Caucasians, but also in Africans. It also seems to play a role in Asians, but maybe not quite so strikingly. But it does appear to be impacting type 2 diabetes in a number of different ethnicities. The thing with TCF7L2 was I was lucky enough to be the first person to report its association with type 2 diabetes, and that was back in 2006. With respect to cancer, there are really two angles why TCF7L2 is involved in cancer. Its role in cancer has actually been, it predates, the knowledge about its involvement in cancer predates that of diabetes. And since the 90s, rare mutations in TCF7L2 have been known to increase your risk for various cancers, including colorectal cancer. But more interestingly and more recently, genome-wide association studies of different cancers, including prostate cancer and colorectal cancer, have thrown up the same region on the human genome on chromosome 8. And this signal on chromosome 8 doesn't harbor any known genes. And investigators have been asking themselves, why is this strong signal coming up in multiple cancers but doesn't harbor a gene? So is it an uncharacterized gene there, or is it a regulatory element for a gene more distant? And turns out, from publications anyway, obviously there's still more work to be done on this, but the first data that's been published from other investigators suggests that this region is indeed a regulatory element for the nearest gene, which is still quite some distance away, but it's the MYC gene, which is a well-known cancer gene. And it turns out that this region where the strong association is, the culprit event appears to be TCF7L2 binding. So not only is the top signal in type 2 diabetes related to TCF7L2, but the top signal with the same approach in cancer seems to have TCF7L2 playing a central role. So indeed, it's getting a lot of attention in both those disease areas.
You and your team recently reported in the journal Diabetologia that TCF7L2 may have an even broader role in disease, especially in other metabolic disorders and heart disease. Would you describe your study and what led you and your group to conclude that there was indeed a broader role for this protein in these other diseases?
TCF7L2 is a transcription factor, as I stated before, and it regulates the expression of various genes because it is a transcription factor. The main question, though, is we didn't know what the repertoire of genes controlled by TCF7L2 were. And so we took it upon ourselves to characterize that repertoire. There's been a lot of literature saying that TCF7L2 confers the risk for type 2 diabetes through the pancreatic islet. Although it's still open to debate, we don't really know exactly how TCF7L2 is conferring risk for type 2 diabetes, but that seems to be one of the main hypotheses. When we tried to do our approach, which was a combination of chromatin immunoprecipitation and next-generation sequencing in pancreatic islets, it failed. So we couldn't figure out the repertoire of genes there, mainly because TCF7L2 expression is very low at the protein level in pancreatic islets. So we turned to a cancer cell line, partly because TCF7L2 is implicated in cancer, and partly because it's abundantly expressed in a cancer cell line called HCT116. In that event, that was successful, and we managed to characterize the 1,000 binding sites that TCF7L2 has in the human genome. When we analyzed the set of genes that were bound by TCF7L2 or within a particular proximity, we could figure out a gene list from that and then feed that through a pathway analysis. And when we did that, we realized that the gene list which TCF7L2 binds to was actually enriched for known diabetes-related genes or cardiovascular-related genes or genes that have been implicated in genetic disorders before. And that came as a bit of a surprise for me, particularly as we were using a cancer cell line. I expected probably pathways related to cancer coming up, but in fact, despite using cancer, diabetes and cardiovascular was coming up, plus other genetic disorders. So that was quite interesting. And because genetic disorders came up, and because TCF7L2 has featured so heavily in genome-wide association studies, I decided to query the genome-wide association study catalog that's available at the NIH, and they've been cataloging almost in real time all these papers that have been coming out that are reporting these very strong genetic associations with disease, and plus obviously the ones that are replicating. And when I do that, I discovered that the genes that have been reported for various diseases are overrepresented on this gene list. So my initial interpretation was that TCF7L2 has a preferential binding to genes that have come out of these genome-wide association studies. So that was quite amazed by that. breaking that down further, it seemed like TCF7L2 primarily liked to bind to genes found in metabolic disease areas using genome-wide association or cardiovascular diseases. And that resonated very much with the pathway analysis. Breaking that further down, the metabolic traits that were primarily bound by TCF7L2 and the genes related to those traits was type 2 diabetes, which is no surprise probably because it's a type 2 diabetes gene, and height for some reason. There's a lot of height genes that have been found from genome-wide association studies, and TCF7L2 from our data suggests that it likes to bind to those genes. We were concerned that perhaps these findings were due to some artifact in our data set that we hadn't accounted for. But we're more sure of these findings because genes found in genome-wide association studies of neurological and inflammatory disorders, a lot of genes found there, they are not enriched in our gene list. So we are saying that TCF7L2 appears to like to bind to genes implicated in genetic disorders in the metabolic and cardiovascular area, but very marginally or not at all in the inflammatory and neurological area. In the middle ground, we found some evidence for a greater affinity for cancer genes, but that was not so obvious. So that was our findings.
Now, your team used the CHIP sequencing technique in your study. What did this method allow you to do, and how did it specifically help you come up with the final results of your study?
Chromatin immunoprecipitation has been around for a while. And what that really involves is taking an antibody that is specific for your factor that you're interested in investigating. The idea is you're looking to make a complex. So you get your antibody, it complexes with your protein, in this case TCF7L2, and it will pull out that transcription factor wherever it's binding to DNA. So what you're physically doing is pulling out all the pieces of DNA that TCF7L2 is binding to. Older CHIP approaches like CHIP on CHIP, so that's using array basis, an array basis has been reported for this factor before, but it's not so sensitive and not as comprehensive. With next generation sequencing, you're basically using a non-hypothesis approach and you're scanning all the fragments that your factor pulls out. The other crucial thing that we did and we took into consideration compared to some older studies was that we had to have the right antibody. The challenge with TCF7L2 is that it is very alternatively spliced at the RNA level. And it's very important that you are not just capturing a subset of those proteins resulting from a subset of those splice forms. And so we, working with others and other groups independently, have studied the splicing repertoire of this gene in recent years and have discovered that at the very beginning of this gene, the protein part encoded by exons 1 to 3 is universal to all these splice forms. So it was very important to have an antibody that was specific to the amino acids encoded by exons 1 to 3. And that was successful. We managed to pull basically what we believe the entire repertoire of TCF7L2 isoforms out of the genome where it was binding and then sequence them. And working very closely with investigators at the University of Pennsylvania who have a great sequencing operation set up and follow-up informatics, we were able to characterize those binding sites.
Your study suggests that you have identified future targets for drug therapy. You also quoted as saying that it might be more feasible to develop drugs aimed at proteins encoded by specific gene classes regulated by TCF7L2 than the transcription factor itself. Why so?
TCF7L2 is a transcription factor, as I mentioned before, and it is pretty ubiquitous in the human body. It appears to be present in almost every cell type, obviously more abundantly expressed in some places than others. As I said before, in pancreatic islets, it's very low expression, but it's still there. So the idea is if you were to intervene on something like TCF7L2, it would probably be not specific enough and probably be too cataclysmic on the system. What would be much more attractive is to find out what it's binding to downstream that might be impacting on diabetes and other related traits. And the crucial point here is that our gene list that is bound by TCF7L2 is overrepresented by genes that we know are involved in disease. And that was a surprise. The fact that there is this marked overrepresentation suggests that perhaps the remainder of my list, which are genes that have not been implicated in disease before, may in fact harbor variants that are involved in disease, and therefore they themselves, those particular genes and gene products, are involved in disease. They may be more specifically expressed in particular cell types, may be much more localized in their effect. And on that list, there are the classic drug targets of G protein coupled receptors and enzymes, and so may be more amenable for intervention. So that's why I think this is an exciting list, because we know it's genetically loaded already by genes implicated in disease, and I'm very interested in the remainder of that list, which may be a very useful target list.
Now that you've completed this extremely thorough study, what research projects do you have planned to move this research to the next level?
The fact that I looked in just one cell line is really just an initial finding, particularly as this cell line in itself is not particularly relevant to diabetes. I really want to do the same approach in different cell lines, perhaps more related to metabolism, you know, a liver cell line, maybe an adipocyte cell line, and so basically generate layers and layers of information and try and find out what the commonality is between different cell lines. And that might give us a much more narrowed view of really what the important genes are that are bound by TCF7L2. I also want to sequence some of these key genes that are bound by TCF7L2 to see if I can find a genetic correlation between variants in that gene and disease, because I know so many of those genes on the list already have that behavior. The issue with genome-wide association studies is that the vast majority of the predicted genetic component of a complex disease has not been solved by genome-wide association studies. So in the case of type 2 diabetes, it's estimated that only about 10% of the genetic contribution has been solved. So there's still 90% to find. It's believed that a lot of those are probably rare variants, and there's going to have to be extensive sequencing projects in large cohorts of patients and controls to find those additional variants. I'm just wondering if my gene list is a short list, an enriched list of some of those genes that the community is looking for. And I'm very keen to take those forward into a targeted sequencing strategy.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening.